You're listening to Rafael Skeet on the Caribbean Radio Show with sports, chat, and more.
Good night, good evening, good morning, good whatever. We listen to sports chat and more at CRS Radio. My name is Rafael Skeet. My guest is not going to be in tonight. He's actually traveling out of town, and he will be back next week. We will have the present of having my buddy, my sidekick, Andrew Dixon, will be coming in a little bit later. We're going to be sitting and talk a little bit about sports. Tonight our topic will be a little bit about coaching. We have one of my favorite teammates that I've known, Carl Nichols. Didn't have a chance to play in the same team with him, or in the same organization with the Baltimore Orioles. Catchy play for the Baltimore Orioles and the Houston Astros. Good guy. I think he's still, I know he's still in baseball, doing a lot of coaching and teaching. Can't wait to talk to him at the bottom of the hour, conversation with him, so I can introduce Carl to you guys and make sure that you guys know who Carl Nichols is, and he'll let us know a little bit about himself and what he does. He played a catching position. I know he do a lot of coaching on hitting, I'm sure catching, and we just want to have a conversation with him and find out a little bit more about what he's doing today. You know, very quiet. He's like a quiet person, but he's very knowledgeable about what he's talking about. And he's one guy, if you anywhere in the U.S. and you want your son to talk to someone who knows the game, he's one guy that you can actually set your son to. So we're waiting on Dixon. And while we're waiting on Dixon, man, we're going to sit and talk a little bit about the games, the women's basketball game that was yesterday, South Carolina against Iowa Hawkeyes. Great game. I wanted South Carolina to win. They won the whole thing, went undefeated. But my first half, I almost couldn't watch it anymore because Iowa started off real hot, man. They started off hot trying to get stuff going. And I was like, man, I can't watch this game. But it's funny when you have faith in your teammates and just knowing what they have to do to get done. And you can look at these guys and the coaching staff. I mean, this coaching is a lot to have. I had a lot to do with what happened, because when you have coach like Dawn Staley, she didn't waver at all. She knew her players. She made sure that they were in a place where they're supposed to be. That's what they practice on. So it's one of those things where you have to know what you have. I try hard also to get Ms. Vinette Skeet, who is a head coach for the Texas Southern women's basketball. She took the helm 2 years ago. First year, I know she struggled a little bit. This year, she did a lot better than she did the first year. And I think coaching, it takes 4 to 5 years, man. Dawn Staley being with South Carolina for 15 years, it took her the first 7 years to really get clicking. And the next 7 years, she her team became hot. So, you know, everybody have a way of getting. See what happens when you go into a school. You know, you have 4 years. You may have some juniors, some seniors, and some sophomores. But when you bring your freshmen in, within 4 years into your fifth year, I think that's when things pick up. We also gonna have a special guest tonight. We're gonna have him call in as well, and make sure that we get him on, because this gentleman that's gonna come on, I think you guys would be glad to know him, talk to him tonight on the radio. So we're gonna have a good show tonight, man. I'm waiting for man Dixon to walk in the room. Once he walk in the room, I know he's gonna get the fire fire rolling on the everything here. You want to call in, man, give us a call at 661-467-2407. That's 661-467-2407. 24/7, and we'll be back and let you guys know what we have going on, man. Again, can't wait. We're trying here to also get a little conversation with Benny Castillo. But I think Benny, by the time he gets ready to go, it's actually very, very late in the process, so it's hard to get in touch with him. We're going to try to set him up maybe next week or so, so we can get a little conversation with him as well. We had a schedule for last week, but it didn't come through because he had some family business he had to take care of. So it's hard sometimes to get some of these guys that are busy, especially when you're still in baseball, man. He do a lot of coaching, and while doing all the coaching, he still runs a facility in Lakeland, Florida. So it's hard for him to get away. You know, it's almost like a one-man show there for him. So we can't just pick him up and get him going and get him away from what he's doing. He's a hardworking man. So we have to set up a good time for him. And I think he have to probably put it together so he can actually join in here in the CRS radio. Tonight on the weather as well, we have Ms. Rhoda Arundel, who usually come in and give us a little bit of the and more of the show. She won't be able to come in today because of her being on a little bit on the weather. So I'm hanging by myself, you know. So we're going to do a little bit of we're trying to see today also is the final championship game, Purdue versus UConn. My money's on UConn. I was telling a friend of mine that UConn operates the program like an NBA program. I think right now I look at Purdue have, you know, a big man in the middle, but UConn have the system, the program. I have a lot to go on it. So we're gonna watch a game tonight. Hopefully we can give you some scores as the game go on. Just stick with us and make sure that you, again, if you want to call in, give us a call. We're here, 661-467-2407, and we'll go from there. And I just, you know, we just have someone slipping in. Dixon, how are you tonight, man? How are you doing today?
Man, I was just walking down. I said, let me pop into the station for a second and come through and holler at you, see how things are going. I know last week I left you on your own. I was a little bit under the weather last week, so I got some little stuff done to my body. And, you know, when you get old, stuff start breaking down, man. I wasn't expecting this in my young age. Yeah.
Maybe you're pointing at people too much.
Yeah, I think I'm pointing the finger at people too much. Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. They say when you point one forward, you got four more pointing back at you.
Right. Tell us how it's going right now. Tell us how it's feeling, how it's going, where you at right now with it.
Hey, well, like I said, it's amazingly, because all these years we play ball, you get little minor injuries, we ice it down, and we get back in the next day, and then now we, at a certain age, we get an injury. It takes so long the pain to go away and superside the comfort. So now I got the pointer finger, so I can't grab the bat for a while now because it's kind of fat, swollen. So I have stitches in there, and I got to keep it wrapped up. And now I got to do therapy, man. I do therapy, everything. I do finger therapy now. I got to go to the doctor's show to bend my finger back and so it doesn't get stiff. So, you know, the good thing is, like I said, the good thing I was able to still go to work. You know, everybody looking, the kids looking at my finger, all kind of jokes with the finger taped up. So you can imagine all kind of jokes the kids making. But otherwise, I've got to thank the Lord, man. I'm here. I'm in right sound of mind and popping through to holler at my boy to see, you know, I want you to carry a load all by yourself tonight. So I said, let me pop in for a little bit.
Yeah, I'm glad. You know, I'm always glad when you come on. Come on, man. You keep things good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you know how we do, man. We criticize, we talk, but sometimes when people got to give the props, we give props, man. I can't see why they want to bash the little young Caucasian young lady, Caitlin Clark. I gotta give her props, man. I mean, everybody, she's doing her job. I mean, she elevated the girls' league this year and the girls' college basketball. So, I mean, you know, she she did work. Everybody's hating, talking about this and that, too much media coverage, but the girl, she's doing her job, man. So, I mean, we ain't got to love her, but we got to respect, like, Coach Stanley said yesterday, South Carolina's coach, that they won. She got to tip her hat to the girl. She got big things ahead of her going to NBA. She also made the league better this year for college. So I got to tip my hat off to her. You know, I'm not going to hate, but she did a good job, you know.
I think she did what she had said. I mean, when I say she'd be doing, she really put college women's basketball on her shoulders this year. But I personally think that she's going to be considered one of the greatest college basketball player, women's basketball players. But I actually think that it's almost like you hear music and you hear that music play over. You like the music, but then you hear it every day. You get tired of hearing the same song. And I think that's what the media did with her, because people would have enjoyed her more if the media didn't just run her. I mean, everything is about her, about her, about her. I mean, you had Cheryl Miller, Swoops.
Candace Parker. I mean, you know, we talked about it in school today. We talked about it's the different eras. Leslie, the tall Leslie girl that went to the L.A. when she came out, Olympic 4 years, Olympic. But it wasn't social media wasn't as big when those girls came out. You know, Hostlop, you know, all those good. But now that social media, everybody gets to see it, she's on a bigger platform. So, I mean, what she did, now everybody, then she broke Steph Curry's and Pete Vanderchek's record of scoring. So, I mean, she had a phenomenal, you know, the last 2 years, we really started watching it. She had a great year. I mean,
She broke 40 records this year.
She reminded me of Larry Bird yesterday. When I seen him walking off the court, she reminded me of Larry Bird. Doesn't look flashy, don't look exciting, but he gets the job. You know, Larry wasn't, you know, he can sit there, hit that jump on you and just, you know, easy. Don't try to put your finger in your face or nothing like that, but he bust you and walk off the court. So she was like, when I left the court, I said, damn, she reminded me of Larry Bird, a girl version of Larry Bird, just, you know, kill you and just get off the court, and the game's over.
So many great stories came out of this. I mean, you could listen to Dawn Staley, and Dawn Staley was saying that, I mean, she's been with South Carolina for 15 years. You know, the first 7 years, she was trying to figure out how to get her program right, and then she got a ribbon, one of the net cut one of the small net, and a coach, I can't remember the name of the coach off the top of my head, she gave it to her and she said, I want you to have this until you get your own. And she looked at her and said, when you want me to give it back? She said, don't give it to me, give it to another coach. You know, and so these are some, this is under the behind the scene kind of things that people don't know about. But Dawn Staley, I mean, for the first 7 years, she was trying to make it happen. This last 7 years, she was rocking. I mean, she won
couldn't get people to come to the games. She couldn't get people in the stands. She was forcing them to come watch, support the games. And then after a while, after every game, she would thank the 10 people in the stands. Now she can't even now the stadium ain't enough to hold the people that come to see her play.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Yeah.
When I look at her and I hear her talk, she's just a genuine good person to me. As me looking from the outside looking in, she's just like a genuine person. She looked like a coach that the players would love to play for. You know what I'm saying?
That's
and
the like a Tomlin for Pittsburgh, right?
But you know what? It seemed like we on the same page. I was just gonna tell you, I was listening to Coach Tomlin 3 days ago, and I said, that is a topic I want to use, and I think you and I would be able to talk about this. He says that coaches are so busy running away from coaching than running to coaching. And he was saying that they're busy telling you, and he used a football metaphor. He said they're busy running away from telling, they're busy telling you this guy doesn't have good hands or this guy doesn't have good, don't run good routes. But he's like, as a coach, if you like this kid, do the job. You know, teach him how to do these things. He said, coach, and that's the same thing in baseball, man. I mean, you got guys who are telling you this guy can't hit a fastball, he can't hit this, he can't do that, he has bad footwork, or He doesn't know how to track the ball. What's a coach going to do for that kid, you know, for that player? So he was right about that. Well, what's your opinion on that?
Well, you know, like I said, I know the way we and you come at kids, like, we like to get the project and parse them up and work on. We're not, you know, it's easy to take a kid that's already a stud and think he knows it all, you know, and then it's nice to get a kid who got the heart, who want to learn and know things and stuff, and you brush them up and work with them, and 3 years down the road, that kid's talent level could surpass the kid that thought it was a stud 3 years ago. They have no level to try to elevate themselves anymore, because once he thinks he's a stud, his level's going to just level out. He's going to, like, level out. So we always like to get the kids who've got the potential to learn how to track the balls, willing to learn how to catch the fly balls with two hands, run the ball down, learn the bunt, swing when he's supposed to swing, come through. So I always like that. I like it that way. I'd rather coach and teach and train a kid who's not a chip off the block but has some potential that could be clean and brushed up, and teach him how to lay a bunt down and make him bat 450, and then next thing you know, that kid's a stud, you know. So I always like those kids. It's good to get a kid where you can see raw talent and say, damn, you know, this kid is a beast. But what I've noticed over the years, the kids that are beasts that can throw hard at 10 years old, they throw hard at 12 and throw hard at 15, but they haven't got better. They're getting, he just throwing big, and the kids that he's bigger than, they start to grow up too. They're going to start getting bigger too. So, he was big at 12, but when the other kids get 16 and 17, they all caught up. So, it's a level playing field. If you don't establish your game to make your game any better, when you get keep, you know, you got to keep getting better and better. And that's what I've always learned. I always thought it was a good thing to keep achieving and keep excelling to make your game like we did. We always figured, you know, go out extra. If we bat 310 last year, we can go out and try to do more BP to bat 330 next year. Don't be happy just hit another 310 again, you know what I'm saying? Because we always know somebody's out to get our job.
Yeah, that's true. Speaking of that, we should have Carl Nichols calling in tonight. We're going to have a conversation with him as well. And I notice I see him a lot on social media working with a lot of kids, and I want to bring up that question to him too. You know, just ask him what he thinks about that comment that Tomlin, and I agree with what Tomlin says. You know, coaches got to run towards coaching rather than run away from coaching. So you're right about that. But I also think that I wouldn't say harder, but it's a difficult, because these kids are trying to master the video game at home in the house now, instead of going outside to master their game. You know, what do these kids don't understand? There's 870 major league ball players, 870 ball players. That's also including the Dominican, all the people from everywhere else. It's an American sport, but 870 people playing the game, including Dominican, Puerto Rican, Venezuelan. So that numbers from the Americans start coming down, right? Then you have thousands of college players, and you got millions of high school players. So where do you want to, if you want to be that 180 players, what are you going to do to get to that point? You know what I'm saying? You have to do. Mm-hmm. You can't just think that game's just going to happen. You got to say, I want to be part of the 870 roster players that play Major League Baseball right now. You also, that doesn't even include minor leagues. It doesn't include, you know, the academies they have.
You found some stats in the book, huh?
Yeah, you got some 180 plus, you got to go bypass thousands. So what's going to make you better, and what's going to make you that guy for them to say, I want Dixon, or I want Skeet, or I want Carl? You know, so what are these kids going to do to be part of that 870?
Wow. I mean, it's, like I said, and these kids nowadays, they're not even trying to full develop. They're getting so talented. So people just grab them because they got talented. So these kids are just like, the game is changing, man. When it's getting watered down so much now, it's not even. Remember a couple years ago, we could always say, tell kids to go watch the big league games. We can teach them. Now I don't even tell kids. They may watch an inning or two, but these kids, the big league guys, have these bad habits now. You can't teach a 15-year-old kid to say, hey, you know, watch the Atlanta Braves first baseman and see how he make the turn going from home to first. The pros are just out there now. Sometimes just going through the motion, collecting the paycheck, and just you know, waiting for the playoff game to come around, you know what I'm saying? Or getting a bonus on their contract for hitting 300.
Yeah, but they're also making more. They're also making more money than the guys back in the day too. So it's kind of crazy because you know, and that's one of the things I look at it like I believe what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. You're right about that. But I'm saying to myself, man. I mean, like, well, you know, you listen to all these NBA also NBA ball players. They're talking about, oh, they couldn't do this in that era. They couldn't do that in my era. They couldn't do that in my era. Maybe not, but these kids right now, these young men, they're bigger and faster and stronger. So maybe they want that. And that goes for football as well. As a bigger, faster, stronger. So,
you got these linemen running, you know, six something and stuff like that. And, man, you know, shoot, you're like, wow, you know, big linemen.
Exactly.
Outside linemen.
Exactly.
Yeah, running back speed,
I look at it that I think that in our era, I mean, it was harder for us to get to the 40 man roster than it is now. You know, I truly feel that way. But I wouldn't say that none of these guys would have made it. But I'm just telling you, it's harder back then than it is now, and that's just
I mean, the draft is helping grabbing these guys from Florida, University of Florida, and putting them boom. Skip them right to big league camp. I mean, like I said, I haven't sat and watched a game seriously to the playoffs last year. I see Best start off on a hot note for the Dodgers there. Best outfielder. Yeah, he is his first week of the season. He was on fire.
Hey,
turned the Yankees game.
Yankees too.
Huh?
So it's looking great with the Yankees as well. He blend in real well.
The young dude, outfield, he's looking good. I see he had a home run the first week against Houston, and Yankees not even quicker. They're 8-2. They had a couple home runs the other night. They got a young infielder, young shortstop, and they're swinging the ball. I mean, but like I said, you know, once they get rolling, they're always going to be offensive wise. You know, they just hopefully they can have some pitching this year. They're going to hit the ball. You know that shit.
Yeah.
That ain't
going to
change.
Don't try to slide away because I'm going to pull you right back. We want to have a conversation about your Mets. What's going on with your Mets, man? I know you're trying to sneak. I know you're trying to sneak out the door without talking about the Mets. But I mean,
after that first season,
I want to say this. Anybody want to call in, man? We see some people listening. If anyone want to call in, call 661-467-2407 at 2407. Give us a call. Give us a talk. And then ask Dixon a little bit about the Mets. So go ahead, Dixon. Tell me about the Mets.
Or ask Skeet about the daggone Dallas Cowboys. Either way, his home team.
Hey, the season is not there yet. Season ain't there yet. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Season is not
there. I haven't been taking my – I know they had a rough time against opening day against Milwaukee. They try to, you know, throw at a guy, and they was having a hard time. But I just hope they can – hope they get a rolling, man. You know, they choked it in the season last year. They went up to the Atlanta, and they got swept the last week of the season. They went to Miami and won. I mean, all they need, and they end up with a tie for the season, but they lost. You know, they lost. So they gotta do better, man. They gotta do better. Lindor gotta hit this year. They gotta come through, man. They got the pitching gotta lock down. So it's gonna be this year is gonna be very interesting to see what happens.
Early in the season. Huh? I mean, I know sometimes it's early in the season. Right now they're playing the Braves and they're down to the Braves 4-0. But I still think they're going to have an opportunity. They need to do.
Mets playing the Braves tonight?
Yeah. I think they're down 4-0.
I know you were saying that because you're a Braves fan now, right? All of a sudden, right?
Yeah. Hey, I'm Atlanta. Let me get an intro here, and I got somebody on the other line. Let me let them in.
You're listening to Rafael Skeet on the Caribbean Radio Show with sports, chat, and more.
Caller, good evening. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. But hey, look who we just talking about you just now, man. You know, we had to talk about you.
That's why my ears are burning.
That's why. Hey, Carl, man, before we even start talking to you, man, I just want you to tell us a little bit about who you are, and we go from there.
My name is Carl Nichols, obviously. Born and raised in Compton, California. Drafted out of Compton High School at 17 years old. Played in, 18 years of professional baseball. And 2.5 years in the big leagues, 3 years in the big leagues. And done a lot of stuff since then, but for the most part right now, I'm training future big leaguers here in Atlanta. Is what I'm doing these days.
That's what I see a lot of, man. And all this time, I think you know Dixon. Dixon on the other line. I think you met Dixon a couple of years ago.
We went out a couple of times. Went to a game a couple of years ago. Me and him sat and watched a game at the Braves game, stuff like that. What's up, man? What's up, Carl? How's things, baby?
Not much. How you doing?
Man, just here in Florida, man. Just taking it easy, man. Trying to survive. You know how it is.
Right.
Yeah. I had the great opportunity to be in the same organization with Carl, man. And it's funny, Carl. It's really weird because I couldn't figure you out because you were a very, very quiet person. You wasn't a very rowdy. You know, were just that guy. You took what you came to do. You came there to make it happen, and that's what you did. You know, you went out and all this kind of stuff very quiet. And I see you a lot on social media. So tell us more. What are you doing with the youngsters that you in here in Atlanta? What are you doing? What's going on?
Well, before I moved here, I actually worked at Major League Baseball Urban Youth Academy in Compton, the first one that was built, and I worked there for 6 years. And so they let me go in 2012, and I was just kind of, you know, doing different things, and I was, you know, trying to get do the baseball thing independently, and, you know, trying to help our kids, but it just seemed like nobody was interested for whatever reason. And you know, and I had been coming to Atlanta every summer for a different reason. My brother lives here, and just made the decision that, you know, the baseball here was much better, and I decided to move here to see if I can help some kids here. It's been working out pretty well so far. So I've been training a lot of kids who have gone on to college and to get drafted and things like that. And just try to give them, you know, information that we didn't have growing up and even while we were playing, so they can maybe avoid some of the mistakes that we made and the pitfalls and all that kind of stuff to go along with the, mechanical stuff that I try to teach them.
You're right, Carl, because some of the kids, I have an academy. My academy is called Savage Academy. I have 11U, 12U, 13, 14, 15, and 16. And I told them, and I keep telling them, I said, the things that I'm teaching you guys, I learn as an adult, you know?
Right.
And you hit
exactly.
The head. I learn a lot of what I'm doing as an adult, and we're trying to make sure that you learn this as a young kid coming up. So you're right about that.
Yeah, like I said, you know, especially the off the field stuff. You know, there's nobody. You know, I left home at 17 years old and was on my own. And even back then, there was no social media or anything. You're sitting thousands of miles away from home in the hotel room, and nobody to talk to, nobody to really advise you on what you should be doing. You know, especially in your off time. So.
I know that part sucked right there, Carl. That part sucked, man. Getting drafted by young age. Because when we was out there in Arizona, we was able to go out to the clubs, and like Ken Griffey and Sheffield, them guys on the age, they couldn't even go into clubs when we was able to go into clubs, you know. So I know you being 17, 18, and they had places you had to either get a fake ID or sneak in some of the big boys. I mean, I know it was rough, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and the issue with, you know, the club wasn't really the issue. It was just... You just feel a sense of loneliness because, again, there's nobody really to relate to you, especially me coming from big city of L.A. And then 3 days after graduating high school, I'm in a place called Bluefield, West Virginia, which was a culture shock. Yes, Keith knows all about that place.
Well, continue. I broke camp and they sent me to Bluefield, and they, you know, they find apartments for you. And the apartment I went into,
right,
they just had beds like in every room, right? And the refrigerator so old was actually round, you know, like that round refrigerator. And Lenny was, after that night, I packed all my stuff in my suitcase, man. I'm like, I went to the Bluefield Park, and I had my suitcase at the end of the game. Lenny was like, hey, I'll take you home. I said, no, you're not. So I'm not going back to that place. So Lenny was like, it can't be that bad. Come on, let's go. So I jump in his car, and I had the address on my written down. So Lenny went to it. Lenny walked in the room, and he was like, God damn, you right. He said, can't live in here. These guys are living here. Man, so he took me to a hotel and paid a hotel for me for 2 weeks, man. I was going to pack up and go home. It was bad.
Right.
And I'm from the islands. I'm from the Caribbean island. I've come to this place. I'm like, dude, I can't do
that. Right.
So
yep.
It was great. So, yeah, Bluefield was my first.
Was there much grass up there in West Virginia at that time when I'm called, when you were skiing up there? There probably was much grass. There was a lot of whites up there.
Yeah.
Well, I was there in 1980, and I don't think I saw one black person that wasn't on the team in Bluefield that year. So, and yeah, you had the apartment. We stayed in an abandoned hospital.
Oh,
you know, yeah,
maybe
we got.
Maybe I had it better than you then, Carl. Maybe I had it better than you then.
Yeah, it was kind of scary because it was literally just an abandoned hospital. We stayed on one of the floors, and we stayed in one of the hospital rooms and bunk beds.
Oh, God. Golly, man. Yo. when people see you outside in the restaurants or wherever, they're like, hey, can I have your autograph, sir? You know, you're a professional athlete. But they don't know the struggles we were going through, man.
Right. You know?
We were going through some struggles. I think we were like, I think I was at $8.50 or maybe $12 a day for meal. I think it was at that time. When I made the 40-man roster with the Orioles, when they gave me my check, I was like, man, what the hell is this? You know, like, what the heck? I couldn't believe they paid me that much more for meal money.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some good times and there's good and bad, ups and downs, though.
Hey, Carl, what area in Atlanta are you in?
Right now, I live in Locust Grove, which is about 30 minutes south, just past McDonough.
Okay, oh, man, you went down. You almost in Macon.
Oh, it's not quite that far, but yeah, but it's a ways.
Going to McDonough, right?
Yes, it's literally the next city over from McDonough.
South. Yeah, I remember on the last trip I had to drive to work. Man, that's a ride out there from down in from Gwinnett County. I had to drive from Gwinnett County to go to this little Christmas job up there at nighttime. I'd be tired by the time I leave in the morning, boy. Like, that's a ride.
So do you have your own facility, or how does it work? How are you handling your business?
I don't do a lot of lessons, so. You know, so I'm all over the place. So there's a facility not too far from where I live called 27 Baseball. I go there, you know, for the local kids that I do. Then I go to DSA up in Marietta. And sometimes I'll just go to the public parks. Like I do, I work with a few homeschool kids. Right. So we'll just go up to Brook Run Park or Brinkley Park in Smyrna during the day while everybody's in school. So, right now.
Yeah. Now, Carl, I know your schedule's been a bit skeet. Me and Skeet been doing this for a long time. Every time I tell him I'm going to Jamaica, I know me and Carl have talked about it, but we finally got some stuff we've been moving. Last July, we took a bunch of kids to the Bahamas because they had a tournament. This guy named Carl. I guess it's something I want to say it's under Babe Ruth International. So we was able to. They took care of the kids when we got them over there. We had to pay for the airline, but we, you know, a lot of countries came, and it was so fun for the kids. So they're inviting us back again next year. But our biggest thing, Carl, was the catching. You know, the catching and pitching in Jamaica. We had a girl catching one of the teams, and you know, with the block balls and stuff like that. So, you know, the games were like, we lose like 10-1, 10-2. We give up like 6 runs on, you know, pass balls, guys stealing. So, like I said, that's the thing I want to get you to see with your schedule, and we can try to find a 3-day session, and me, you, and Skeet, and I got some other guys, and we just do a little session, and we go down there and work on, you know, from one part of the island to the other part, and just work on some catching, blocking drills, and show them how to do it, because the kids have some talent. We got a couple of kids with scouts came looking at a couple of kids down there, but the catching department and the pitching department, holding them on and, you know, stepping off, trying to pick up, that was their thing, you know, but otherwise, the kids had a good time. They had a good tournament. We're going back again in July, so I'm trying to go back down before then to put a little international game, just a little weekend game to help them get ready for the Bahamas again. So I'm gonna get with you and check your schedule, and then me and Skeet, you know, I'm gonna Skeet write this ticket out on his academy. Skeet Academy gonna pay for me and your ticket call, so we're gonna work on that with Skeet so he can take care of us.
Okay.
I hope that Skeet heard that part, Nick. But we had to repeat it again.
The volume went down a little bit when you say that. I didn't hear what you said. hey, also, Carl, man. I think I mentioned this to you before. There's a tournament in the island of St. Martin. It's going to be their third annual. And we're trying to get it's a no age limit. It's, you know, you could be any age, but if I go down, I'll go down as a coach. Dixon will go down as a coach, but I really don't want to coach. But if we work it out where you can come down and enjoy like a staycation, would you come down with the guys and just coach and stuff like that?
Yeah, just let me know.
I think you'd be, the reason I told you this, because I think you'd be grateful. I've known you for a long time, man. I always respect the way you approach the game. You're one of the guys that I can tell anybody that this guy just was a professional. You know what I'm saying? You that's just me. I don't know what you did when you got off the field and when you're not around me, but when you're on the field, I see the thing that I'm supposed to see in a professional athlete. And that's just me being honest.
That started with my old, I'm the youngest of 10 kids. So, you know, my older brother was just for baseball. You know, that's how he taught me how to play. And then once I signed professionally, I learned from guys like John Shelby and Eddie Murray. And, you know, they would talk to me, especially John Shelby when he would come down from big league camp. You know, he would just break things down to you know, how we're supposed to be, just how we need to be in order to make it survive.
Real good guy. I mean, John, and you know what the funny thing is, though, man, having an opportunity to be around Eddie Murray, man, that guy is a gentleman. That guy is such a cool cat. You know what I mean? He's hilarious. He's funny. He's just a good guy. I mean, you know, he's like one of those guys D would just joke all the time. You know, like he's swinging, he would go, oh, he's swinging. Oh, someone's swinging and miss. Oh, he's waving at me. You know, stuff like that.
He loved to laugh.
Yes. And a pitcher would throw a pitch on Eddie, and Eddie would swing and make himself look, not the pitcher make him, but he make himself look bad. The pitcher threw the next pitch, and he took it deep. That's just Eddie Murray. That's how he is, you know.
That's a setup. That's a setup swing. Remember, Pete, we call it the setup swing. That's a setup swing.
Carl, when you caught, what pitcher was a pitcher that you say, man, I can't believe I'm catching this guy? What pitcher was that when you were catching big leagues?
I guess the first guy, I caught Jim Palmer, but I only caught him in the bullpen. I didn't catch him in the game. But the first time I caught him, I was like that.
Yeah.
Right. Because just a couple of years earlier, I was watching him pitch in the World Series. I caught Scott McGregor in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I caught Mike Flanagan.
He's a nasty lefty.
Yeah. And when I went to the Astros, I actually caught Mike Scott last career game that he pitched.
Yep.
Awesome. That's awesome. Because, you know, a lot of kids, I was telling Dixon, man, you have 870 kids on all the rosters in Major League Baseball. That doesn't, and that also including guys from Dominican, guys from Puerto Rico, guys from Venezuela, guys from Japan, 870. Plus you have thousands of guys in college, millions of guys in high school, and then you have baseball academies all over the place. So as a kid, as you, that one kid, what are you going to do to get past to be part of that 870? You know, that's what a lot of kids don't understand. It takes a lot to get to that point.
Yeah, and that's some of the stuff that I try to teach these kids. Like, you know, they don't, you don't really realize it until even after you get out of the game that there's only, when I was playing, it was only 750 jobs in the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so for anybody to even just get there is a major, major accomplishment. But I tell these kids all the time, I say, getting there is easy. The hard part is staying there.
Hey, man. That's true.
You know, so like you said, what are you going to do not only to get there, but what are you going to do to be able to stay there? Because once you get there, you know, there's no more development, and then you got all these other guys coming after your job after you.
If you're looking at the game right now, which player you look and say, man, that guy can play some baseball? For me, it's Mookie Betts. He's Mookie Betts. That's my guy.
Yeah, Mookie Betts, he does everything. He's a team player. He can do everything in the game. Yeah, so I like him. I like Acuna. Those two guys are probably I like the most. You know, if I get a chance to watch them, I'll try to watch them.
Right. D, who's your guy? Who right now would be that guy?
I like how Judge play. And I like the young boy that brings the game. What's the one I said went to the Yankees now? The one that was with Padres?
So,
the young? Huh?
Juan Soto.
Soto, yeah. I see, me when we played, it's like, I like people that bring energy to the game. But I guess when we played ski, you know, it's just like a Ricky Henderson has made the game, you know, made the game seem so exciting. I just like to see that little kid play, man. He's just so excited and so pumped up. I really just watched him like a little bit last year, and I watched him the other night when he hit the home run, and I guess when you're young, they're just having fun still, man. The game, and that's, I like when people, the game is still fun to them. That's how I try to look at it, even when I'm trying to coach. It's like, to me, just I'm just having fun like a kid. I just like to make the kids feel
right.
Like it's still fun, man. I'm going to ask you, Carl, because I know a couple of times when you came and you met me at the school up there, and Redan, and you up at the little kid the one time. I mean, you acknowledged that little kid. He was like overwhelmed. Do you think the kids nowadays, how's the work ethics? You think these kids nowadays put it in, or just they just expect it all today? Do you actually see the kids, are they really putting work in these days, the kids you've been watching?
Well, the kids who are, you know, accomplishing things, yes, they're putting in work. But there are too many kids who feel entitled. You know,
right,
they think things are supposed to be given to them. And, you know, because there's a lot of kids that I work with, you know, we bump heads, and the parents don't like my style of coaching, whatever, because I tell the kids the truth.
Right.
Right. And, you know, and I tell them, you know, the habits you have now is not going to work at the next level. You know, so you either need to get it together now, or, you know, you go pay for it later.
And that's what's keeping going on tonight.
I've had so many guys and parents. Players and parents come back to me later, you know, telling me I was right. I should have listened to you, all that kind of stuff. And it's like, hey.
What they don't understand is that you walk that path, so you know that path. You know what you're talking about.
Right.
You know,
and right.
The problem is a lot of times baseball seems like the only sport call that all the parents think they know best. You know, they think
right.
It's crazy.
Right, they think they're playing in the major leagues is the same as playing in the little league. It's not.
Right. Hey, hold on one second. Let me do a station break.
You're listening to Rafael Skeet on the Caribbean Radio Show with sports, chat, and more.
Hey, caller, don't say anything yet, man. Hey, call. I called this gentleman. I want him to come on the radio just to talk with you. I don't know if you talked to him in a long time. Tom McGraw. Tom, how you doing, Coach?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I got Carl here on the radio with me, man. I said, come on, I got Carl. I said, you remember Carl? He said, yeah, I remember Carl.
How you doing?
Yeah, doing good now. Doing good. Can't complain. Hell's
awesome.
Good. I had a couple of rough years for medical. Fine now.
That's awesome. Good to hear your voice.
Oh, it's good. Hey, it's good to be able to speak to somebody. It's good.
Hey, Carl, you want me to tell you something, how I met, I reconnect with Coach? He was in Birmingham, Alabama, right? And he was showing some videos. And he was like, he asked, he said, what's the best pitch to hit? You know, a man on third, what's the best pitch to hit? So I go, a high fastball. He turned around, he said, who told you that? Where you get that from? I said, my coach, my old coach. He's like, who's that? Like you.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah, I remember a lot of good conversations on the bus we had about hitting, which I still teach a lot of the kids today. So
good.
The thing is,
when you get it right, it doesn't change. It can go 100 years. It's still the same.
Yep.
That's
exactly.
The point. That's
the
point
exactly
of,
what I tell
good, them. A good teaching, when you get the right point, somebody just selling bullshit or just trying to help a kid get better, then you tell him the truth, and it'll always stay with him, you know. And if he want to go with baseball or basketball, it stays with him. It's the truth and what he's trying to accomplish. That's the bottom line.
It's weird because Carl just mentioned something. He said sometimes the truth, they don't even want to accept the truth. They know that they think you're not telling them the right thing because it sounds too rough.
Well,
yeah,
you know what happens, though? See, when you tell someone the truth, there's a success goes along with the truth. Tell you something about hitting. It's not something I grabbed out of there. It's something I've experienced. It's something guys that I've talked to or played with or coached for have reiterated this to me over and over again, but they're all successful.
Right.
They're all successful. That is the key to keep kids playing. If they're having success, and you what's something you told them, and it's working, they're having success, they're going to have fun.
Right.
They're going to get high school coaches and college coaches and eventually into pro ball. But the truth will lead them there. If you're lying to them, they're not going to have the truth.
That's true. I'll let people know we're talking to Carl Nichols from the Baltimore Orioles and Houston Astros, and a super batting coach, Baltimore Orioles, Houston, Texas. Where else did you coach? Where else did you coach?
Man, I coached with the Mets for 10 or 12 years, Astros for 4 or 5 years, Cleveland 2 or 3 years, all over the place, Baltimore 3 or 4 years, Montreal 3 or 4 years. But let me put it to you like this. I was Frank Robinson's hitting coach for 12 years.
Got you.
So that'll come all the places.
Yeah.
When he came as a manager and coach, I was a hitting instructor and coach.
Okay.
That's where we first hooked up together. And from then on, I quit for a while and I came back. And I'll never forget it because he's got the Giants. Now, he got the job with the Giants. And I'm walking across, I'm doing minor league work, and I'm across with some of my minor league hitting players, and Frank comes running across the field. And, you know, what the hell are you doing? I said, I'm working. What do you think I'm doing? He said, why don't you get a real job? Good job. I got a real job. He said, no, you go sit by your phone. I'm going to call you tonight. You'll get a real job. And sure enough, the Giants called me that night at my hotel room and said Frank wanted me to be his hitting instructor in San Francisco. And that's
wow.
Me and I hooked up from there. We stayed together for the next 12 years, Montreal, everywhere.
Awesome.
That was a great experience because it's so much knowledge came out of that. I could tell you some story. I'm riding with Frank because we became great friends. If you saw one, you saw the other. And we're riding down the Highway 5, Interstate 5 in L.A., and I said to Frank, I said, you see where Clemente passed away? He said, yeah, I saw that in that plane crash. That's terrible. He said, yeah, he said, he's a great player. And I said to Frank, and just out of the blue, man, I have to say this to you, and I'm going to leave this alone. God has a lot to do with it, because I'm saying to Frank, I said, you know, I don't know where in the hell it came from, except from God. I said, it's a shame that Clemente passed away, and nobody ever knew what he thought about hitting.
Wow.
Nobody ever knew. We knew he was a great player. We knew it went with him. And I said, you know, somebody ought to have that stuff down on tape somewhere. He said, yeah, that's
right.
A good idea. Why don't you do it? I said, who, me? He said, yeah, you. I said, no, Mason, yeah, you. He said, we're in San Francisco, and the great hitters come through San Francisco. He said, they'll talk to you. Just ask them to talk. And that's where it started from, where you speak to great hitters about things that, why are you so great? What
mm-hmm.
makes you so great? And they start talking, but when they talk about what they do. The correct questions are never asked of them. How did you do it? For instance, I'll tell you. I'm talking, and I'm saying, well, where did it start for you? And they don't know. They don't know. I've talked to Pete Rose. I've talked to Stargell. I've talked to Matlock. And Matlock, one, made sense to me most. He said, you know, Tom, when I was a rookie with Cubs, they had Ernie Banks, Billy Williams, George Altman. And what those three guys would do is after the game, they'd sit in the clubhouse and drink a beer and talk about the pitcher that pitched against them that night. But they would also talk about the pitcher who's going to pitch against them tomorrow. He said, I was just a little rookie. I just sit in the corner and listen to them talk. And when they talk and say something that's interesting, I try that myself in batting cage and batting practice, and it works. And he said, that's how I started. And so I started paying attention to great hitters. Because they will tell you what they're thinking. But if you say, man, how's hitting the audience? You talk to Barry Bonds. How you? No, man, I'm hitting something. But they're hitting 340. They're hitting 350. Oh, man, it's just, you know, it's just another day for them. That's what they do. That's
right.
What they're prepared to do. And so as starters, you need that start. Why? And that's how it started with me and Frank telling me, you know, talk to these great hitters and see what they think. And that's what I did. And I came up, basically all of them think alike. Every one of them. And I'm going, how in the hell could that be? Let me give you a quickie. Pete Rose and I went to the major leagues in 1963, June. Same month. Pete Rose ended with more hits than anybody that ever walked. I ended up with maybe 900 and something. How in the hell could that happen? I could run faster than he could. I was strong as he was. But he had 3,000 hit, and I barely got to 1,000. And I just couldn't figure that out. And that bothered me for a long time. It still does. But it bothered me for a long time because I didn't know why. How could that possibly happen? Because back in the day, when they taught, it was all about physical, how strong you were. And it's not about that. It's not about that. It's about mental, how mentally strong you are. You understand? So that's where the separation came between Tom McCraw and Pete Rose. Pete Rose picked it up. I didn't. I heard it. I didn't discover what it was. I had heard it. I heard it from Clemente. I heard it from Frank Robinson. I heard it from Willie Stargell. I heard it from Buckner. Buckner was my favorite. Hey, Buckner said, why in the hell would I be looking for a slide and a curveball? He's those out pitches.
Right.
I had
a discussion with a kid today. That's literally.
Yeah.
I tell my kids the same thing.
Yeah.
Why are you working on the pitcher's best pitch? Why are you
a pitch you can't hit.
Exactly. Because if his best pitch, we can't hit it. If he throw away,
Well, hell, I was in that for 10 years. But what would happen was because I could run and steal bases, and could play outfield and play a better than average first base, I kept a job not just because of my bat, but because I could do other things that would help the team win. And so, you know, we'd finally dunge on you, I wasted 10 years in the major leagues. But I would go 2 weeks burning it up, hitting 640, 530. Wake up Monday morning, it's like I never knew what a bat was. But I didn't know why. I had no idea why. What the hell? How can I hit like that for 2 weeks? And then the next week, it's like a bat's the foreign thing in my hand. Because I didn't have the mental problem. I didn't have the right mental information. And then when I played in the 60s, you didn't have batting coaches.
Right.
And the batting coaches today teach the same shit they taught in the 60s. So you don't see a lot of improvement in the offensive play of professional baseball today because they're still teaching the same way they taught us, or they didn't have nobody in the 60s. But when they start having batting instructors, it was the same thing. It was the same thing. You were teaching the same thing that you heard. And so, but it's not right.
I remember when I was with the Orioles, and Deacon Jones was the hitting instructor for the minor leagues. He was talking to us about hitting it off the ball, how to hit the ball off the tee. And then he turned his back to the tee, and he was talking to us. He just turned around and hit that ball like on the money, like on the pitch. Just hit that ball. I was so impressed. With that
Deacon I stayed in the major league as a player 13 years. Deacon is the only fucking guy I've ever seen could work Koufax's ass out. He wore Koufax out. Now, Deacon was a left-hand hitter.
Right.
Left-hand hitter. You know Koufax, great left-hand pitcher.
Yep. Yeah.
Sticking it up everybody's butt. But in spring, when we played the Dodgers, I was with the White Sox, so did Deacon. When we played the Dodgers, he would wear Koufax's ass out. And I'm going, wow. Man, that's impressive. Everybody else talking about how great Koufax was. And Deke was hitting him like he was a little league pitcher.
I'm going to ask both you guys this question. I'm going to ask you first, Coach. Who was the toughest pitcher you faced?
Steve Hamilton, Yankees, big left-handed. It's like he was in my head. He knew what I was looking for, and he threw the opposite pitch. And sometimes he just threw it and laughed. I looked for that big curveball, and he beat me with a fastball. And I looked for the fastball, he threw that fucking curveball.
What about you, Carl?
What was what?
Seemed like everybody gave me problems, but the guy that was tough was this guy named Dale Mahorsick because of the way he threw. By the time he let go of the ball was coming out of his uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was wearing that white uniform, couldn't see the ball.
Right. I've heard of that once or twice. I think Frank, when we were with the Angels, it was a guy like that. And Frank, that son of a bitch is throwing out of his uniform. I don't pick that ball up till late.
Right.
And stuff like that. And that happened very often, thank God. Thank God. They stopped a lot of guys back in the 60s and stuff. They couldn't wear, you see all the guys wearing the chains and shit now? They wouldn't let you wear it. Back in the day, because that chain flick out there and flick through the sun, it's a little flick by the time he let go of that ball, and it takes you off of what you're trying to do. So now they can work chains and whatever they want to do, but you couldn't do it back then. They just started that probably 12, 15 years ago. They wouldn't let you do that. You just couldn't do it. And the gloves had to be a certain. You couldn't wear them real light gloves. The pitching gloves, they had to be dark.
Hey, Skeet.
Yes, sir.
Skeet. Let me ask Coach Tom. Hey. Coach Tom, I don't remember. This is D. Dixon Tom. We met down at with Plump down in Alabama years ago. I missed you, man. You ain't seen you around. But my story when I met you was in your interviews with Stars. You did your little symposium and you had those videos, man. I was like, that just blew me away, you and Stars and some of the guys. Same thing you talk about now. You interviewed them guys and you showed us in the break room. I said, man, that was like some of the bomb stuff I seen, man, because I grew up loving the Pittsburgh Royal family, and I seen you had the interview with them guys, and I'm like, man, that was like some awesome knowledge right there. So I was wondering how you doing, man. I know a couple of years ago you wasn't around too well. So how's things going now? How's everything coming along? Can you hear me? Coach Tom? Skeet. Coach Tom, can you hear me?
Still there, Coach Tom?
Coach Tom, you still there?
Yeah, I think he broke away a little bit.
He was lost.
He broke away. Yeah, but yeah. But yeah, I think one of the things that I like when I saw him and Nate Oliver sitting at the table just talking like good old days. That was nice.
Slim and Nate, yeah.
That was nice.
Yeah, we got to get Nate on one night.
Yeah, you know we got. Paul, what's next for you, man? What you got going on? What's next?
Got a few things going on. We actually starting a baseball channel. It's kind of like it'll be Netflix for baseball.
Okay.
So it's called Outside the Diamond. It's already up on Roku and Fire Stick. It'll go up on the rest of the platforms in June. So basically, it's going to have any podcast. In fact, you guys need to bring your show to the channel.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to be baseball movies on there, different podcasts. I'm going to be doing a podcast on there. We got a show called Kids Corner where we got kids that go out and interview other kids at their travel ball tournaments, stuff like that. They're actually going to be going to the Little League World Series and doing interviews and stuff from the Little League World Series this year. So it's all on this one channel that we're doing.
Give me the name of that so I can actually put it on my Facebook as well.
Yes,
people can know.
Yes, yeah, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, and if you go to if you have Roku, just type in Outside the Diamond, it'll show up. You just click
Outside the Diamond. Okay. I definitely
yep.
do that.
So that's the main thing I'm working on right now. Doing some other stuff too, but that's the main thing with baseball that I'm doing.
What make you work on this? What make you put this forward?
Well, actually, a friend of mine who's he's actually the son of a guy that I played Little League with, and he's he does a lot of stuff. He's a concert promoter. He had another channel that he had a bunch of movies on, and somebody approached him about doing the baseball channel. So he called me, one of my input on it, and so we just kind of partnered up on it. We're actually going to be doing like some original baseball movies content kind of stuff, putting it on there. So it's just like everything's going to be baseball. And we're planning on going to the All-Star Weekend and doing some shows from there.
Where is it going to be this year? In Atlanta?
It's in Dallas. It's
in Dallas.
Texas. And it's in Atlanta next year.
Okay. That's nice, man.
So that's the main thing I'm working on. Like I said,
I'm a step forward. I was talking about, look, I'm deep into travel ball now, and it's weird because even with travel ball now, we're working on these kids, but some of the kids, they forgot it's not rec ball. So the parents, they're paying their travel ball money, but they're telling you, I pay this money, my son should play. So those are the things that we try to, and I know, and it's funny because I know you and hearing you talk now, and I had you talk to a dad about his son in college, and you were like raw, honestly, hitting right between the eyes. I could imagine you talking to a travel ball mom or dad about the kid.
That's part of the reason why I'm not in it so deep, because and it's not really the kids, it's the parents. They just can't handle the way my style of coaching because I'm in for it for the development, not to win tournaments. And
correct.
So they don't like, so a lot of times they don't like the moves that I made. They think their kid, I should be pinching for this kid because he's 0-3 and all that kind of stuff. I don't do that. And so, so it just became a big headache for me because, like I said, they couldn't handle my style of coaching. Right. If a kid sucks, I'll tell him to suck, but I will also offer him the solution.
I can't do that call. I got to work. I'm working on that, though.
Well, but I don't just leave it at that.
I don't know why Skeet acting like he told a kid he's no good before. Why you out there? You can't do this? Because you've done it before. What you trying to say now? You change?
When you own the opportunity, it's hard. But listen to this. I had a conversation with a dad, and I said, let me talk. Let me let you talk to someone I know that will be doing.
frank with you, if you have between the eyes. And he spoke with Carl, and Carl hitting this guy so much between the eyes. I think I felt bad for the dad. I felt bad for the dad. I was like, man, he's telling the rock straight up, you know. How old is he again, Carl? How old is he, 22? No, it was 25, I think. And Carl was like, oops, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, like, I mean, you know, you don't want to waste people's time. And, right. And one thing I don't want people, I don't want anybody coming back to me later saying, why didn't you tell me this is going to happen?
We have a problem this evening. I deeply apologize for that. Again, we do thank you for being here.
Yeah, you know, so I, you know, and I tell the kids that, say, you know, you may not like what I'm saying, you may not like me, but one thing you ain't going to do, you ain't going to come back to me later and say, why did you tell me about that, or this is going to happen? But they come back all the time. You know, everything you said was going to happen was true, or I'm glad, you know,
right?
You told me, I should have listened to what you told me.
I'm almost there, Carl. I'm almost there. You know, I just,
the longer you do it, the easier it gets.
It's one kid I got on my team, 10 years old, playing with 11U, was kind of shaky, but we worked with him, and this guy is like, it's like a wall or something. And the dad from the other kid was saying, well, we didn't win the last tournament, so why don't you just put any kid in all the different positions? I was like, that don't work that way. It don't work like that. So the reason why you're doing that, because your son is not giving me 100% on practice. We'll practice. You win your lineup in practice. You win that lineup spot in practice, not in the game. You know, that's what I tell him. I said, if you didn't give me 100% in practice, you're not going to be in the lineup. So those are things that I tell these parents. A lot of them don't like it, but it's being real. You know, the lineup is made in practice.
Right.
I figure if you want us to talk, if you want me to talk nice to you, I'll send him to Dixon. You know, Dixon have a way of being nice.
Yeah, we've changed the roles over the years. I know I used to be the mean one, and then you'd be the nice one. Now we've flipped the role now, so now I'm the nice guy. They'd be like, Coach Skeet's so mean. Why is it? I said, yeah, he's going through some problems right now. What you need? What's the problem, you know? We know you got to switch up on him, Carl. We got to switch.
I got to tell him the truth. But I said, like I said, I am not as – I listen to Carl, man, and I'm not there yet. I'm getting there. But
you see, you had your moments now. You used to be kind of rough. I don't know. You had your moments. You used to tell him, yo, man, you just ain't going to make it. You just got to cut it, man. Your kid just he's not there.
Yeah, and I was – you know, what ends up happening is, like, you got a travel ball organization. The more kids you start dealing with, you're going to find yourself not wanting to waste time with people because you got so many kids you have to deal with. So you got to get right to the point with them, right? So they're either going to listen and what you have to say, or they go find somebody else. But you know, so as you get more kids that you're working with, you get more blunt in what you have to tell them, because you don't want to waste time. You don't want to waste their time. You don't want them wasting your time.
Yep. I had a parent, mom told me, her son, Paul, he couldn't catch a ball. You know, he couldn't catch a ball. I didn't put him in first base because she said he's a first baseman. I didn't put him in first base. I put him in right field somewhere. You know, you could hide your players. So after the game, she said, can we talk? I said, well, sure. She called me the next day, and she go, I have an issue. I said, why didn't you put my son in the game? I said, Mom, I'm glad you called me about a position and not his dental bill. Because if I was in first place, what you would call me and talk to me about is his dental bill. You know? So I'm glad you can talk to me about something else, because I wasn't gonna allow myself to put that guy in that position. Sorry.
Yeah, but sometimes that's how you gotta be, because you know these parents are just delusional about their kids. And
I'm working on it.
Yeah, I had that in a tournament in Arizona. I was working at the academy. One of the dads was complaining about his son, where he was batting the lineup and other kids playing in front of him. So, and I, you know, the kid was terrible. So the next game, I batted him third, played him at third base, right? And couldn't catch a cold at third base. And every pitch they threw up to the plate, he was swinging and missing. And every time he swing and miss, I would just look. I would look over at the dad, and he would look me in the eye. And but after that game, he didn't say another word the rest of the tournament.
Yeah. You know who would do something like that? My partner Tony. Tony would do that. He would put a guy in that position just like you would, and he would do the exact same thing you did. Look at the dad. He would do that.
And just let him die out there. Then.
Right.
And he's like, there's your answer right there.
Here's the reason why he sucks. Skeet, I'm going to handle some stuff, man. I popped in. I'm going to let you call, ride it out. Mr. Carl, we're going to get in touch. I'm going to check back with you in a couple of days or two and send you a message to let you know about these dates. Skeet.
Okay.
I'm going to holler at you tomorrow, Skeet.
All right. Hey, don't be all pointing at anybody tomorrow, man.
Yeah, I know. I'm gonna keep my finger in my pocket. Go Steelers. Go Steelers.
Yeah, okay. No, go Mets. Hey,
all
right,
man.
All right.
Have a good night.
All right.
Hey, Carl, thanks for coming on too, man. I appreciate you so much, man. Hey, I would like to do this again and probably talk about the program, the TV program and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. For sure.
Definitely, we're gonna make it happen. Thank you so much, man.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you.
Talk to you later.
All right. That was Carl Nichols. Carl Nichols, man. We played in the same organization with the Baltimore Orioles organization. Real good guy. Again, straight. He shoots straight to the forehead. He doesn't miss a word. He said it in a very professional way, not in a very arrogant way. He said it in a professional way. And that's one thing I like about baseball. You know, when you meet baseball folk, we also had Tom McGraw on the line with us. Tom McGraw played probably about, 15 years, 16 years in the major leagues. He was my hitting coach. He said hitting coach for Cleveland Indians, hitting coach for the New York Mets, Baltimore Orioles, Houston Astros. He did it all. And this guy, Tom McGraw, I think one of the things that I remember so much about Tom McGraw is that Tom McGraw treat every player the exact same. He did not change anything. I remember with Cal Ripken and Eddie Murray on his team with us when it was Baltimore. And if he give Cal Ripken 20 swings, he's going to give me 20 swings. You know, that's just how he is. You know, he doesn't treat anybody different. And this is why, we could sit down and have a conversation with him. There's some coaches that you had in your lifetime that you don't even want to, you know, say anything to him or talk to him at all. Tom McGraw is not one of those guys. There's a lot of coaches. I had coaches in my time with the Orioles organization, and I remember them more than I can remember anybody when I was with the Brewers organization. I had Glenn Glover was my coach, one of my coaches. Will George, another one of my coaches. We just lost another gentleman, Carl Nichols. Carl Nichols was another one, a good coach. Lance Nichols just passed away, I think, 2 weeks ago. But these are guys, man. These are just men of men, you know, that you, when you're around them, you look at them and go, wow. And then we were talking, I forgot to ask Carl, because I remember when I was in the 40-man roster, the Orioles, you know, we played in we played the Yankees, Fort Lauderdale. And at that time, Ricky Henderson, Dave Winfield, all those guys were still there. And I was in awe just looking at these. Because like Carl said, when he caught McGregor, he saw him for years before that in the World Series. It's funny when you see these guys, you see them, they're like 10 foot tall on TV, and then you walk next to him, you go like, wait a minute, this guy's, you know, he put his pants on just like I do, you know.
So these are the things that as young kids, we're talking about how many kids are how many players are in the major leagues. We have all these major league ball players, but it's not a lot. You know, like Carl said, it was 160, 120 when he was playing, and now it's like 860, 870. But still, this is not excluding. It's including players from all over the world. So as a kid, what's your goal? Where do you think you belong? Do you belong on the video game and thinking that that's what you're going to do, or you're going to get outside and work to be part of that 870 on the rosters that's out there in the major league? So you got to understand, how bad do you want this game? What do you want from this game? You know, Tom McGraw was talking about talking to all these big superstars, the Pete Roses and the Madlock and all these guys. And when he talked to them, they all say the exact same thing. You know, they look for fastball. Why work on the pitcher's best pitch? You're not going to hit it anyway. You know, so you have to be able to. That's why when these guys are throwing 100 miles an hour and 98 miles an hour, these guys are still hitting them because they know that's the pitcher's weak pitch. They're trying to get by as a strike and always set you up to throw their best pitch. So you have to be able to be there and knowing what you have to do as a ball player. Young guys, man, stop sitting in there. Stop playing video games. Stop thinking that you can just wear the uniform and make the uniform look good on you, and you're gonna get by. You can't get by that way. You got to work hard. And like I said, hard work is just the beginning. So you have to know what you want to do. Put that effort in what you want to do. Work 110%. And get yourself ready to play that game. The game is not easy. Baseball is one of the toughest game. The ball is one of the toughest ball out there to hit, you know. So, and then the spin of the baseball determining where the ball goes. Don't concentrate on the spin. Concentrate on a good pitch to hit. Concentrate on a good fastball. Now, we were saying if a man is on third base and is less than two outs, get a ball that you can drive in the outfield. Bases loaded, same approach. Don't change your approach. You could either hit the ball and you get a RBI with no at bat in either one of those things. So stop putting pressure on yourself. Just sit back, relax, watch a game, and know what's going on. Your at bat does not start when you go up to hit in the batter's box. Your at bat really should start in the dugout, but it's really – I've learned that you're at bat start in the on-deck circle. That is where you pay attention to the speed of the pitch, the pitcher's motion, the pitcher's speed. And these are different things that you have to learn about this game of baseball. It's not easy. And in every sport, any sport, you cannot just wake up and think that you can play it. You've got to work to it. And parents, I'm telling you, let the coaches coach the kids. Let them do what they know they do best. I know, not only that, vet your coaches. Don't just go and just get anybody to work with your kid. Get to know these coaches who are touching your kid. Know what they did, how they did it, where they were, their experience, because that's where your kid's going to be developed. You cannot just bring someone to a kid or a kid to someone and just say, okay, I jump in my car and get on my phone and the guy's as a coach. No. Know the coach. Know who he is. Know what he's doing. You know, give him the opportunity. Give that kid the opportunity to be coached by excellent coaches, good coaches. Now, I'm not saying every coach has to be a major league. I'm not saying every coach has to be a professional athlete. I'm saying every coach has to know the game, has to really show you that's what they know best. And so you have to actually say to yourself, am I ready for my son to or daughter, whatever what sport, for this guy to really touch my kid. So you just have to understand, man, don't just give your kid up to anybody. These guys, there's a thing where you may have 10 or 15 kids, maybe 100 kids, and one kid out of 100 out of this camp become a superstar. Where's the other 99 you didn't do? Because the coach probably didn't know how to touch the 99 player. But that one player that made it out of the camp just had it. He was a natural. So don't take what one guy did to one kid. You got to look at everybody and say, this is what I want for my kid. If this kid was honest with me, like Carl Nichols was saying, some coaches do not like the way you coach their kids. You know what? You can't,
if you bring this kid to a coach, accept his criticism. All criticism is not negative criticism. You know, I could tell you that this is, you can't cut it this way. There's kids that I've touched that I look at them and I say, wow, and there's some kids you say, ooh, got to put some more work in. So that doesn't necessarily mean that you could turn your back. And I said earlier, it seemed like parents, where baseball is concerned, it seemed like parents always think that they know the game better than the coaches. These coaches play professional ball. These coaches play major league, minor leagues, college, high school. You know, again, you got to know what you're doing. You got to know how to work with your kid. And like Dixon said, we're trying to get down to Jamaica and try to help Jamaica. I'm not saying create something. We're just going to try to make it better and try to work with Jamaica and help Dixon and Mr. Brown do something and help advance the game in Jamaica. That's what we're looking for. So, you know, we just got to understand that baseball is sports, but baseball is a funny game. Baseball humbles you. It have a way to humble you, have a way to bring you down to size, put it that way. You know, you're good today, and you think that, you know, hey, nothing can stop me. And then tomorrow you go and face somebody who you thought you can hit and can't hit them. You know, most game baseball, pitchers and catchers, what really makes the game. You have, as a coach, I coach up the middle. I coach a good catcher, good second baseman, good shortstop, and I'm good. You know, good center fielder, second baseman, shortstop, up the middle is for me is where it is. So if you keep working that way and keep working and knowing that you put a good roster together, not just a roster, you have a good, matter of fact, a roster. If you have a great roster, then you know how to pick your team from that roster. So you got to bring the game to you, know what you're doing. And it's funny thing that Carl mentioned, and he says something that I know my coach Tony Holman would say. You know, hey, if the dad and the mom make all that noise and say, my son, he would put them in that fire. He put both feet in the fire. And when they make a play, he just look at the parents. Don't say a word. Let the parents evaluate why you were doing what you did. And that's one thing I say a lot of parents don't understand. They have to understand that these coaches, us, I'm part of that situation. We are people that you may have one son, and if we have a team of 14 kids, I have 14 kids. You have one son. I have 14 kids that I have to deal with. I have 14 emotions, right? I have 14 feelings. I have to know how to create these feelings. I also have to know my players. And I was saying earlier that the lineup that I make, or the lineup that all coaches make, is not based on feelings and not based on today. It's based on what you did in practice, how you create yourself. How can I say, separate yourself in practice? That's what we look at. You know, you may have some team that you say, I need this guy, I need that guy. But as soon as somebody else come and join that team, it's easy to take that guy out of that position because he didn't deserve the position. He was there because you had no other choice. But when you have somebody that you say you have to compete against, he doesn't know how to compete. And then the parents like start saying, wait a minute, why is my son not playing? Pops, he's not playing because, you know. And so those are the things that you have to really, really look and really say to yourself, what are we doing? Mom, dad, I spoke to a mom today and she says something that I never even thought. She said, the reason I brought my son to you is because you and Coach Tony doesn't have a kid. And we don't want daddy ball or parents coaching kids, you know, and it makes sense what she said, but that's not why we do what we do. But I understand I understood what she was coming from, because like she said, hey, I've never been in travel ball, and I just wanted to make sure my son is in a good place. But you and Tony, Coach Tony, are doing a great job, and thank you so much for what you're doing. Because she saw that we are just doing what we can for every kid, not one kid. We don't have a kid in the game. You know, my youngest is 21 years old, going to be 22. So I don't have to
to wonder about it. Tony doesn't have a kid as yet, and I emphasize as yet. But he is so good with the kids. He's so good as a coach. He knows how to sit down or stand next to a kid, put his hand on their shoulder, and say, "Hey, listen, I have faith in you. I trust you." And these kids react to that. And that's one of the great things about D-Savage Academy. We actually have a way to get to these kids. Have a way, but parents sometimes get in the way of the growth of these young kids. And the parents have to understand you can't do that at all times. You can't do it. You have to let these kids, not only that, you have to let them fall. You have to let them grow. And we're trying hard not to have this daddy and papa and all that stuff, because it's not good for the game. The kid is a shortstop, or he's a pitcher, or he's that guy, you know, and he doesn't deserve it because dad is a coach. We don't play that. In our organization, we play the game the right way. And we are actually, if you guys go to Facebook and go to The Savage Academy, you'll see that we actually have open tryouts, 14, 15, and 16. We're trying to make that happen get more kids on ready to go. The 16-year-old is going to be playing some good competition, so just be ready to be part of a good organization. And parents, again, let the coaches do their job. You pay the money to have your kid train. You pay money to do all that stuff. Sit back and let them go to work. You know, let the coaches go to work. Let the kids get what they need. And stop coaching from the seat. You coach from the dugout. You're just hurting your kid. And then we want to eliminate that. So I want to thank everybody for being listening to us tonight. It was a pleasure. We had a great guest. We had Carl Nichols. We had Coach Tom McGraw, and my co-host was Andrew Dixon. We'll see you guys next week, same time. I'm glad to have an opportunity. Thank you so much.